Welcome to the Middle Age-ish Podcast. Authentically and unapologetically keeping it real. Discussing all things middle age-ish. A time when metabolism slows and confidence grows. Join fashion and fitness entrepreneur Ashley Bedosky, former Celtic woman and founder of the Lisa Kelly Voice Academy, Lisa Kelly, licensed psychologist and mental health expert, Dr. Pam Wright, and highly sought-after cosmetic injector and board-certified nurse practitioner, Trisha Kennedy Roman. Join your hosts on the journey of middle age-ish.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Middle Age-ish. We're so excited to be here today. I'm your host, Lisa Kelly, and I'm joined here with Ashley Bedosky, Trisha Kennedy Roman, and Dr. Pam Wright. And I'm super excited about our guest today. Not only is she a fellow Irish woman, which I'm always like proudly flying the flag, but I actually know this incredible woman. This is Emer Halpany, and Emer is a writer and a director from Dublin. And many years ago, I'm not even going to say how many years ago
like
it was.
Five.
When I was like 19, I actually got to work with Emer, and she's fabulous. She's just a fabulous woman with a really precious soul. And sometimes you just connect with people, and I always felt a connection to Emer and her wonderful husband Jeff. So she was always incredible. So she's, as I said, she's a writer and a director. So her Facebook posts are always really funny and always really eloquently written. And I watched throughout COVID as she was trying to wrangle chickens in her backyard. Gosh, in Dublin.
I want to see that. Yeah, yeah. Seriously.
It's hilarious. And trying to do it like in the middle of Dublin city centre is just pretty. Although she knows she doesn't live in the middle of Dublin city centre, but you guys would consider it.
We would consider it in the middle.
They're all country folk here. But a couple of months ago, I came across a really beautiful post that Emer had put out there. And it was something that I didn't know about her, and I just felt it was a beautiful story and just something that I think is probably so relatable to people, and especially, you know, Irish people. And we don't often share stories like this. And I just thought that this was a really human, beautiful story to tell. So I was going to give it a proper introduction, Emer, but I felt it was kind of your story to tell. And we'd be really honoured if you'd share your story with us.
Well, thank you very much. That was a lovely introduction. And I launched straight in. In 1988, I gave a baby boy up for adoption. And that sort of started my path, if you like. And it was very difficult, and it was kept very quiet for a while. And then after a few years, I began to tell people my story, and just kind of, if it came up, you know, I would tell people my story. And then as time went on, I kind of wanted to not sweep it under the carpet. I wanted to talk about it more. And I suppose I was kind of expressing myself a lot more through my writing. And I just began to write articles for magazines, or you know, if I was interviewed because of my other business, which was a drama school and theatre director, and if it came up, I just spoke about it, and it kind of went from there. And then in 2017, I did a TEDx talk, and everybody else that was, I did it about that, about a, I called it the power of decision, because making the decision was obviously probably the most difficult decision I ever made in my life. And everybody else that was on the TEDx talk with me seemed to have written a book. And I remember thinking, well, I suppose I should write a book. So I started writing them. I started writing my story then, and I just kept changing it, and I kept trying to perfect on it. And there was always a reason why I never sent it off to anyone. And then over lockdown, I thought this would be a good opportunity to really edit the book and, you know, kind of get it done and get it sent to a publisher and get myself an agent. And what actually happened, I suppose, because during the lockdown, during COVID, and we all had so much time, I actually ended up inadvertently uncovering and delving into the trauma of having lost a baby. And I didn't know that that was what I was doing, but in fact, that's what I was doing. So the book got completely rewritten, and it was very raw, very therapeutic, but the work was really, really, I mean, I went to a very dark place, facing up to, you know, like I say, the trauma and pain and the feelings that I had suppressed for so long, because over the years, I would look back and I would say, you know, did I make a mistake? Do I feel guilty? And I'd look at everything that I had, the reasons that I had given him up for adoption, and the way my life had turned out. And I just couldn't regret it. I would say, you know, if I was to go back in time, I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
Even though it meant, you know, a lifetime of pain. So because of that, I kind of didn't think I had any internal work to do. But obviously, I had a huge amount of internal work to do. And so that was the work that I did over COVID. And then kind of coming out of that, I just kept rewriting it so it wasn't so raw. And I decided I was going to self-publish the book. And I literally had everything set up to self-publish, and I was going to kind of do it over the weekend. And I was sitting in work on the Wednesday, 29th of November last, 2023. And I was flicking through my messages on Instagram, and suddenly I got a message from somebody saying that he was my son, and he was sorry to contact me that way. And he had all of the information that he should have had as somebody I'd given up for adoption in 1988. My first thought was, why would somebody do this to me? How did somebody get this information, and why would they do this to me? And I was texting my husband, and I just didn't believe it, because it was almost 36 years. And right. I had all but given up hope. Yeah, I had gone beyond the point of even daydreaming or even entertaining that anything like that would happen. And then I went on to his Instagram page, and I had a look at the photos of him, and I knew it was him. So wow. I catapulted into shock immediately, and that was when the story changed. Did a full U-turn.
That's incredible. I was only thinking about that this morning when I was thinking about talking to you today, and I was like, gosh, I wonder if, you know, if I didn't see my kids for a really long time, I wonder if you do, especially when they change so much from kids to adults. Like, do you know, would you know that, would I know it was them? It's such a hard concept for anyone to try and wrap their head around.
Well, he was, he was about maybe 3 months when I last saw him. And the setup that I had when he was adopted was that I would be sent a photo every year and get a little update on how he was doing. And so that was fine until he was, about five. And at the time, I knew his family lived in Dublin, and I just was looking in baby buggies everywhere. Right. I went, I was looking out to see, because, you know, I have no brothers, but I've only sisters, but he was beginning to look like my cousins.
Oh.
So I knew I would kind of recognize him. And so I stopped. I made the decision to stop getting the photos, because I just was torturing myself.
Right.
Then I knew his family moved down to Kerry, and that was where he was brought up. So when he was 21, I just wanted to know how he was doing, and I got in touch with the agency, and I asked for a photo, and I got the photo, you know, of when he was like 20, 21. So the photo that I saw on his Instagram, even though he is now 36, was him talking about his journey, having gone to Canada, where he now lives, and he went when he was 26. So that was kind of like, there was only a couple of years between the two photos. Mm-hmm. So I saw that photo and I just went, oh my God, it's him. And it was incredibly surreal.
Oh my goodness.
Incredibly surreal.
And 1988, was it, in Dublin? I mean, that was a very different time in Dublin as well. Like, I remember being in school and a girl, and it would have been, I was trying to think about that today, it would have been around the same age, and she was in high school with, I was still in primary school at the time, but she was in secondary school. And I remember she was like sent away down the country, and then she came back with a baby. Now, she actually did keep her son, but it was like, it was so scandalous at the time. And even as a child, yeah, I knew that it was they were making it out to be scandalous as well, and you're like, oh, it was so hard in those days.
Yeah, there was a completely different way of viewing particularly young girls. Mm-hmm. And but you know, it was at the time a lot of girls were beginning to keep their babies, and it was, you know, I always think that they were the ones that kind of paved the way. They were very defiant. We mm-hmm. were still very, you know, very Catholic country, and very, you know, very much, even though we were a little bit more defiant, like I say, we were still kind of under the thumb of the yeah. church, and our parents would have been under that pressure. And, you know, I know, you know, in my case, my parents, it wasn't so much that, but it was just kind of thinking about my future. And mm-hmm. I think that's why they gave me, you know, the option of adoption. So I probably was a little bit different in that, you know, anybody around the area here that did get pregnant. And of course, girls were getting pregnant because nobody was using contraceptive.
Yeah, right.
Contraceptives. Nobody meant to get pregnant. You right. know, we were all like, oh, you know.
So there was you a were a kid anyway. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you were still a child yourself.
Yeah. Well, I was, you know, I was 19 when I got pregnant, which, you know, is not like very young.
Mm-hmm. I guess to me at 52, I'm still thinking 19 is still a baby. I was a baby at 19.
I know. And I was. I mean, I was really scared. I really,
of course.
I really was. But mm-hmm. you grow up very quickly. But mm-hmm. I weighed up everything. The baby went into foster care after I had him in the hospital with me for 4 days. And then he went into a foster family. And the idea being that I would be able to kind of just get my head together and make a kind of a clear decision. And it was supposed to be for 6 weeks, and it was kind of more like 9 or 10 weeks. And then I decided that I would keep him. And I had weighed everything up and made that decision and told everybody, told my social worker, told my parents, my sisters, and told the foster mother, a woman called Aideen. And I went to the house sort of, I used to go and visit him. And I went kind of the last time, and we, you know, it was all very joyous. And and then I walked into the room where he was, and I just knew that I was not making the right decision. And it was a really, that's the last time I saw him. I kind of put him back down in his cot, and I knew that I wasn't actually going to. Mm-hmm. To keep him. So,
heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
It was like something that was kind of bigger than me that said, you know, what do you think you're right. doing? Yeah. You know,
well, yeah. I think that's the ultimate mother's love, is when you have to weigh the options of what's best mm-hmm. for the child in that moment, and not weigh what you think is best for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, 100%. And I would have considered myself, I would have been a very sort of a wayward teen, I suppose, and never really thought, you know, about the full picture. And suddenly here I was having to think about, you know, a person that I loved more than myself.
Right.
And mm-hmm. Yeah, it was massive. It was the biggest thing that ever happened to me, you know.
So once you realized that that was him, it was actually him, what happened from there?
Yeah, well, I was in work, first of all, so I no longer work in the theatre. I kind of fell into a few different things. And then after COVID and a few other things that happened, I just said, I just want to go and get a job with a salary. So feet down doors.
Right.
Yep. So I work as a clerk in a hospital. And I was on my lunch and there was a nurse was in the canteen with me. And I kind of just went into shock. Like I kind of had trouble breathing and gasping, and it wasn't really crying. It was more like gasping. And yeah, so everybody in work knew it straight. But they all knew that I was about to publish this book. Everybody knew my story. Like I say, I've never hidden my story, but I sort of said, well, like my son has contacted me. And then I was saying, but it's good, even though I was crying, I didn't know whether I was coming or going. And I went outside, I phoned my husband and he said he'd come and get me, but I couldn't speak. I'd lost the ability to speak. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, like, where are you? And I was like, I'm at work, and you know what? So anyway, he directed me, told me where to go, got into the car. And just as it happened, my two daughters they're 22 and 24, and they both happen to be home. And so it was just the four of us. And we were talking about it, and I hadn't answered him back, or hadn't really fully read the message even properly. So the girls got a lot of information about him. They like within, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing what the younger generation can find out in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Check out his Tinder.
Yeah. And tell.
Yeah. So they were saying, you know, he tried to contact you 2 days ago. So what had happened from his point of view was that he had gotten curious and got some information from Adoption Ireland. It had arrived on the Monday. So the Wednesday was the day that this all happened to me. But on the Monday, he got his information from Adoption Ireland and had been thinking, oh, you know, I'll just sit on this and see what I'm going to do. I'll decide, you know. But when he got my name and he Googled my name, and the internet lit up with me talking about him, basically. And
so sweet.
You know, so he just said, she's been so open, I have to contact her straight away. So he sent me a really beautiful message on Facebook, which I didn't see because I'm not really on Facebook all that much. And so it was 2 days later, and he then sent me a message on Instagram, which is the one I saw. And so we were at home, my husband and my daughters and myself, and I kind of said, God, this is 2 days ago that he texted me first, and you know, but I can't string my thoughts together. So my daughters began to text him on my phone.
Aww.
And they were texting each other, and they were just saying, look, Emer is in shock, and she will talk later, but at the moment she just wanted to kind of say she's thrilled that you got in touch. And it was just so lovely, because you know, like, for all of those years I had no personality to attach to the baby that I lost,
right? Mm-hmm.
And suddenly here was this grown man who was saying things like, I can't believe I'm talking to my sisters, this is amazing. And he was saying, you know, give him a hug from me. And had said things in his initial message to say, I know why you gave me up, and you did it for me, and you did it because you love me, and thank you, and I've had a great life. And you know, I thought they were very kind things for him to have said to me. Right. And you know, so I kind of straight away warmed to the person that he was, because you don't know. Like, yeah. you know, over the years, you can think, what if he does get in touch, and what if it's not compatible, and what if, you know, what if he hates me or hasn't forgiven me, or so it was none of those things. And I began to text him then later on the day when I had kind of, you know, was able to form a thought again. And we were texting for the whole night, and it was just so lovely. And like, that was November, that was the last day of November, so we are in touch a lot. And we've had a few video calls, like our video calls for an hour and a half, you know. It's getting quite normal now. Like, you know, we're kind of like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to ask. Is it like those, is it that it feels really natural? Or was there like hesitation?
There was certainly hesitation from my point of view, in that I was terrified I'd make a mistake.
Yeah, of course.
I was like, oh my God, I've been so lucky that he's this kind of person, and that he wants to reach out. And what if I trip up? And what if he talks to me and he goes, maybe not? And he picked up on that, you know, our first video call. He said, by the way, he said, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I want you to be yourself.
Did he always know he was adopted?
He did, but he didn't have really any information. Okay. He wouldn't have known that I was, you know, that I was interested in him or anything like that. And he said it wasn't really something that they spoke about. It wasn't an issue for him. He just kind of thought, oh, I suppose my mom didn't want me, but it didn't really bother him. He had you know, a very supportive and loving family, and he was very happy growing up, which is what I wanted to hear.
Right.
Like, you know, it was kind of weird when they said that to me. I didn't want to hear that, oh, he had suffered all those years, because then I'd feel like, he didn't make a mistake.
Yeah.
So it was good to hear that, but and you know, really special to be able to kind of just go on social media and see, you know, his family and see him and his wife and his children. And
oh my God, you're a granny.
Yeah. I know.
That was probably the hardest pill to swallow.
Actually, you know what? I would have said that it would be. I would have always said that. I'd be saying to my daughters, you know, if you have kids, they're not to call me granny and all of that. And it didn't bother me at all. I'm going around saying to the dog, oh, granny, give you a treat. And, you know, so.
That's amazing.
It's such a great story. Yeah,
so you haven't met him yet? You haven't actually physically met him yet?
No. So he lives in Canada now, as I said. And I would have hopped on a plane the next day without a doubt. But so we both had agreed we wanted to meet sooner rather than later. But he's coming over in June. So so we're going to meet early June.
Oh my gosh, we have to have a follow-up call. We do have to. Have you been in contact with like his adopted family?
No, I have no contact with them.
Okay.
So I did meet them. I met them initially. I met them once I had made the decision, you know, to go ahead with the adoption. And they had the agency or the social workers had chosen a family. We had a meeting and it was very emotional, obviously. I felt better after it. Like, I kind of felt relieved because I liked them, I trusted them, you know. And then that was the last that I ever saw or heard of them. I mean, it's not for the want of, you know, stalking Facebook and wondering, like, I didn't have surnames or first names, even. I didn't have anything, you know.
Wow, that's such an amazing story.
So did you feel like a lot of the healing happened when you met him and or talked to him and knew that he had been okay, that everything was good, that you did make the right decision? Do you feel like a lot of the trauma that you'd experienced had been healed with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I kind of went through the trauma to the point of healing, to the point of accepting that I had, you know, suffered a trauma from having lost a child. And there my story ended. And I kind of felt that I had, this is where it is. This is the end of the road for me. So I have to get on with it. So I feel that I had kind of done a huge amount of internal work. And I have some friends who are, about three friends who are psychotherapists who are kind of saying, you really shouldn't have done that work on your own. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, well, I didn't actually know that's what I was doing, actually, mm-hmm. in fairness. But when I met him, it was like, I don't think it would have been the same had I not done that work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's like, this is what I think. I feel like I moved stagnant energy and it brought him to me, mm-hmm. in a way, you know, that's kind of how I feel.
And that help wouldn't have been around when you were 19 anyway. I mean, mm-hmm. it wouldn't have even been, I'm sure nobody even suggested you go and speak to a therapist when you were 19.
Well, I did have a social worker who was, it was helpful to talk to her about the things. But yeah, I mean, definitely, if I had known what I know now, then yes, I would have begun the excavation, as I call it, a lot earlier. Yeah, definitely.
It was different, completely different Ireland in those days.
And the funny thing about the book that has kind of, I was writing another book, unpublished still, and a novel completely unrelated, and I couldn't move forward with it until I went back and wrote the book about my story, about my adoption story. And I really felt that creatively I was very very stuck, and I just needed to get this book written and out of the way. And that was how it started, and it kind of obviously turned into so many different things. So I've done nothing with it, because I think until I meet him, mm-hmm. I'm not going to make a decision. And I, like, he knows about the book, and he's very laid back, and, you know, whatever I feel I want to do with it, he's okay with. And I've even said to him, gosh, maybe it could be like a biopic or something like that, yeah. you know. Mm-hmm.
I think
he'd be open to that.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. So,
and is he creative?
So I don't know.
Does he have the same creative brain?
I was delighted that he, I was saying, oh my gosh, he writes really well. His posts on Instagram, you know, I'm going, oh, it's great that his grammar is really good and all of that, you know.
He knows where to put the apostrophe.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh, no, yeah, that's great. Like, he wouldn't consider himself creative, but he's actually quite funny. Like, he has a business with his wife, and, you know, so the way he would be, you know, in some of those posts, he's quite funny and very engaging, but kind of just genuine, very kind, just a great person.
Just I'm like his
really
mommy.
Proud of him.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's so great.
Ah, sure, look.
Oh, what a gorgeous story. That's like a tragic story with a beautiful ending. I'm so excited for you. I'm so excited you get to meet him.
So I have a question for you. So as a psychologist, it comes up a lot, both from parents or mothers who have given up, you know, a child, and also from people who are adopted and say, like, I wonder if I should, like, search. I mean, this comes up all the time in counseling. And now there's 23andMe where people can find, you know, relatives and things like that through or ancestry.com. So for you, would you give any, I don't know, advice, feedback, any thoughts about how it's like to be on, I guess, either end and have someone reach out?
Well, first of all, I'd say, every case is different. Mm-hmm. And you just don't know how somebody's going to be. I think both of us are extraordinarily lucky. Mm-hmm. He didn't know what he was getting into when he contacted me. And then he has this surprise of, gosh, I never stopped actually thinking about him or talking about him. So, you know, he knows he's going to be gaining a new family, and everybody knows about him, and everybody's going to welcome him. There's going to be no shocks or anything like that. And I get the gift of, you know, he hasn't harbored any, any ill will towards mm-hmm. me. He's you know, very grateful and has had a good life. So we're both very, very lucky. Although I do think he was incredibly brave to make that connection first, mm-hmm. because he didn't know what he was getting into. And I know there are people who do that and it doesn't work out for them. But as a birth mother, and I can only speak as a birth mother, I mean, you, even if the circumstances are such that you're not going to connect with your child, or, you know, so if there's somebody who's looking to contact their birth parent and they're not getting in touch with them, or they don't want to know, it's not that you're not loved or haven't been thought about, or, you know, there haven't been nights, long nights when, you know, your birth mother has not, you know, has been crying herself to sleep. And, you know, and it's not just me. When I did a TV program a few years ago called Adoption Stories, mm-hmm. on, you know, national television here. And it was a really hugely popular program. It was like the series 6 or something like that. And an awful lot of birth mothers and, you know, lost boys, if I, for want of a better word, contacted me after it, you know, and just wanted to talk. I met some of them personally. A lot of them we just spoke on the phone. A lot of them we just emailed. And there were a huge amount of birth mothers who had not told the story to their family. Mm-hmm. Even their husbands didn't know. And they said, you know, that they would go to their grave and never connect with their child, but that they, every single day that they, you know, they were thinking and carrying the love for that child and the loss of that, mm-hmm. child. So I kind of would say to people, you know, if you think that you are okay with, you know, you don't know what's going to happen, it may be a happy story like ours, and it may not be, mm-hmm. but I would just kind of say to people, take heart that it's so unlikely that you have not been loved and thought about every day.
Yeah.
You know, your mother carried you for 9 months, like she's, you know, there's a bond.
Yeah. What's literally a piece of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible. It's an incredible story.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing.
You're so brave. Mm-hmm.
You are.
Like, unbelievable. As I said in your intro, I always knew you were a beautiful soul, but just even the way you tell this story, mm-hmm. is just so raw and so transparent and so emotional. And I don't think any of us are any the better for all of us.
So I think my nose is
too well. Exactly. Really, gosh.
I love to talk about it.
Yeah. And you're helping so many people.
And I've always loved to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what's important. I think you touched on it there. I mean, I know a lot of people, a lot of friends and family I have that are adopted as well. Mm-hmm. You know, their mums didn't tell anyone that they'd had kids. Yeah. So they were always afraid to go back and to find their mom, or from that rejection, being so afraid to be, mm-hmm. rejected, you know, which must be terrifying on both parties,
both
as the mom.
Yeah.
And
on both sides.
As the child, I just can't even imagine. I'm just so glad it was a happy ending for you.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait till the book comes out.
I know, and amazing. I will say one more time, follow up.
I know, June.
After June, we would love a follow up.
Oh, I'd love to.
We'd love to.
That would be lovely.
We'd love to.
And I might have made a decision at that stage as to what I'm going to do about the book.
Yeah.
Because
you're going to know it when you know it.
Listen, like, it could be a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll know when you're supposed to know what you're supposed to do with it. So
thank you for staying up so late to talk to us.
I know. And thanks for being such an inspiration on something that people don't talk about all that often. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing story. And we're so very happy for you.
Thank you so much. And can I just say to the four of you that I'm only getting into podcasts, but I really enjoy your podcast. And I think you make it work really well. There's four of you. It shouldn't work, but it does.
I know, right?
Thanks so much, Emer. Take care. Give our love to Jeff.
Best of wishes. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Bye, love.
See ya. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
love that.
I couldn't really tell. Okay, I was holding back tears.
I was tearing up. Okay, I know. Like,
that
I was like tearing.
Very emotional. We all know that I don't do well with that.
I was, yeah. Mm.
You know, my favorite thing, though, was what she said at the very end, because I do think that there are some people who, if she's married, if she hadn't told her husband and he contacted her, she might not reply. Yeah. And then that feels like rejection. So I'm mm-hmm. crying and saying, but what she said about to know that, like, you were still loved, but maybe there's a reason why they're not reaching back out. I think that's important for people to hear.
I think it's incredible. Incredible.
Oh, there's someone out there.
I can't even describe
that needs to hear this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can't even describe what Dublin in 19, it sounds like she had like a super progressive family, because like we still had laundries in Ireland at that stage where like young girls went and they lived in like industrial laundries and they had their babies and those babies were taken away from them and they were given away and they were all run by the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. They were run by the nuns. So,
I don't think that the U.S. was, well, I mean, I guess I can only speak for Missouri, but my town wasn't overly progressive. I mean, there was maybe, I don't know, two or three that I can remember, but they just went away.
Yeah.
And no one talked about it.
Yeah.
And it was like a whisper, but there was no acknowledgement. Mm. There was no, and again, there's, I mean, I'm not throwing stones at all, but I do agree that it was a different time.
Totally.
And different. Terrifying for that person, because I think it would be terrifying even now in a way.
I think here, not in Ireland, like it's pretty standard in Ireland. It's not seen as, you know, a terrible thing right. anymore. We have lots of unmarried mothers and it's just the way society kind of formed. Mm-hmm. Whereas I still feel here where we are, I feel like this is Ireland in the 80s sometimes. I kind of go, oh my God, like, you know, people would be horrified if their 19-year-old daughter got pregnant and wasn't married. I still think that would be a huge deal here.
I don't know.
Did you see that? It was on the news. I think it was maybe two or three weeks ago, but it was all these women, I think in South America, and they were told that their babies were died at birth, but they were alive and they took them all and like they were all... And they found out later, and there was like a reunification of like the, you know, all these mm-hmm. kids with their moms, and just they knew immediately, but they thought all this time their kids were deceased. And then having that reunion, I just can't imagine.
There was a special story, I think it was in the US though, that happened with a certain, you know, doctor's office or whatever that would do that. I can't remember what it was now, but it was like, I don't know if it was Dateline 48 hours.
Yeah, I think it was Dateline. Yeah.
It was really interesting. I mean, it was horrible because they thought they'd lost their baby and then found out later
that they were alive. Mm-hmm. So sad. I can't imagine.
At least social media is good for something. It's like for those kind of things. I often think though, those dinner parties, you know, with the 23andMe.
There
must have been some very awkward conversations at Christmas when everybody got a 23andMe set.
Oh my gosh. I can't, 1,000%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the men are like, oh no.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, seriously, because like just for so many different reasons.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you put the DNA out there and you can track a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So I just...
She's brave, though.
Like what you said, Lisa, like her energy and just her spirit.
She's gorgeous. Yeah. She's just such a gorgeous person.
Like, you don't even have to see her
to
feel...
Yeah, her warmth.
Just what an amazing human she is. Mm-hmm. So...
it would be fun to follow up and find out how that
works. I really would love to do that.
Well, I'm friends with her on Facebook, so I'll see it all and then I'll get her back on. And she will. Right. She'll keep her promise. She'll be good.
I just, you know...
Talk to her again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah.
You know, we always like a good ending.
Mm-hmm.
To a story like that.
Special story.
Like, I know. Like, it's always nice to just celebrate the good endings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cheers to happy endings.
Happy endings. Yes. Cheers. I just can't. Oh, my God.
No.
Like, let it go.
I think so too.
This is what it's like to be with us.
That was totally innocent.
We say happy endings and we meet it in the basic
sense. In the most genuine way.
Exactly.
Have a great night.
Have a good night.
Thank you for joining the ladies of the Middle Age-ish podcast as they journey through the ups and downs of this not young, but definitely not old season of life. To hear past episodes or make suggestions for future episodes, visit www.middleageish.com. That's www.middleageish.com. You can follow along on social media at Middle Age-ish. Also, if you have a moment to leave a review, rate, and subscribe, that helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Once again, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll catch you in the next episode of the Middle Age-ish Podcast.